if you're innovating, creating, or making a difference.
This show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
My brain never turns off. I never get writer's block. People used to say that I was just sort of like a treasure trove of quotes and thoughts and ideas. So I thought, oh, you know what? I'm just going to write everything down and maybe someone can quote them someday.
Dave Shelton could accurately be described as a nonstop creative. Dave is an award-winning cartoonist who worked as senior writer and head of cartoons at National Lampoon in the 1990s. He's also a voice actor and a filmmaker through his independent production company, Funstertainment Productions. In addition, one of his most recent projects is the publication of his book, Brain Explosion, which is a collection of his cartoons, quotes, and poetry. Dave, tell me please the story of the creative journey behind your book, Brain Explosion.
Well, it started as an idea because, as the name says, my brain never turns off. I never get writer's block because there's always something coming out. And except when I eat too much, it's usually out of my brain. And it started also when I was working as a senior writer and head of cartoon projects at National Lampoon back in the 90s, I would keep track of every little quote. People used to say that I was just sort of like a treasure trove of quotes and thoughts and ideas and profundities. So I thought, oh, you know what? I'm just going to write everything down that I ever say and, you know, maybe someone can quote them someday. So that's kind of how the impetus of the book started.
There are some wonderful quotes in here, too. And before we get to that, I would love to have you tell me a little bit about what you remember about growing up in northern New Jersey that led you to become a nonstop creative like you are.
Oh, that is a very long story. But basically, it started that where I grew up, it was a very nice suburban, the schools were great, kind of a town. And I didn't grow up in the greatest of households, so my father was very abusive, my mom was an alcoholic, so I had to, and my brother was a bully, he was like voted the bully of our school, so I kind of had to find some way of dealing with that, and I used my creativity and my decision not to fall into the same traps as them, and, you know, that's kind of, I think, where it all stemmed from. But I loved growing up in northern New Jersey because I love small towns, and all my friends and the people in the town were very cool.
Talk to me about coping skills for kids in that situation before we move on. What specifically did you do that helped you get through all that?
I found alternatives. I looked at, maybe it's just me, but, you know, I'm sure most kids, if they are given mentoring, could kind of come out of situations like that very successfully, because you don't want to repeat pattern these things, because all that does is perpetuate more problems. And I was also very fortunate because I had an aunt that was very nurturing, my mom's sister, and I had mentors at school, teachers that I could kind of do stuff with after school and help me with curricular activities. But I think it was also me. I think innately I was born this way. And I just decided, you know, we're all given a choice. I decided to use mine for the positive. And I looked at what the alternatives were, and I said, oh, I do not want to be like that. So it was a conscious choice.
There are a lot of positive messages in Brain Explosion. Before we get to that, though, the one question I would love to ask is, what was one of the very coolest things about being head of cartoons at National Lampoon, and what was one of the biggest challenges you experienced?
Well, one of the best things about being with National Lampoon was that it's an iconic institution. It had everybody from John Belushi to Chevy Chase to John Landis. I mean, everybody was involved with National Lampoon, who were the icons of comedy, you know, starting out as the magazine in the 70s, the Lemmings radio show. I mean, they were kind of my inspirational comedy idols back in the 70s when I was in college. And I said, you know what, someday I'm going to be with them. And sure enough, like 20 years later, I wound up being with them. And it was a fortuitous kind of meeting because I knew this woman who was involved with it that I met through someone else. Because when I first came to California, well, just as a background, I used to be, when I was in New York right after school, I went to the New School for Animation in New York City. I hooked up and started working with MTV and Nickelodeon in its infancy. And then I was a writer for Tiger Beat magazine back in the 80s. And, you know, I would just meet people. And then I worked on a book called Comic Lives with Betsy Borns. And then from there, I met up with Tim Allen and Robert Wall. And so I worked on their HBO specials doing artwork for them and then on some of the game shows. And I sold a toy line to a company in L.A. called Imperial Toys that I created. And so it was logic would come out. So it was through that that I met the woman that ultimately brought me into National Lampoon.
And what was one of the biggest creative challenges?
Creatively was dealing with the publisher because the magazine had undergone some ownership changes. Actually, the whole franchise had gone through changes as well. I was fortunate because not only could I write, but I'm also a cartoonist, so I was able to kind of double up. And I'm really good at marketing and going out there. So I was able to solicit, and of course, using my own artwork, a lot of projects. We did National Lampoon greeting cards, which I did, and National Lampoon calendars. So I was able to get deals for calendars, date calendars, and wall calendars that would go into, like, novelty stores and Target and, you know, anywhere calendars were sold, and then other product lines. But also being able to write the comedy. And as I said, not only was it trying to deal with these new owners who kind of didn't have the same underground, alternative, in-your-face, politically incorrect views of things, which is what made National Lampoon so successful, was also, you know, dealing with the fact that they didn't have as much money as I thought they were going to have. But for me, it was just working there, and that's why all the ancillary projects that I worked on brought in a lot more money. So those were some of the challenges.
Let's look at some of the cartoons from that time that you have here. I'm going to start by picking on my absolute favorite, where you depict, there's soon to be a couple in Hollywood, where the woman's smiling at the man because she thinks he's going to be a director, and meanwhile, he's got his own agenda. Would you tell me about this one?
Well, that one, I mean, I skewer in the book pretty much everything. From Hollywood to sports to marriage. And that one was inspired because everyone thinks in Hollywood that if they present themselves a certain way, that they are like the top of the food chain in Hollywood. So, like, people, there's one also where, you know, this one girl thinks that this other guy is, like, going to be an agent, but he's really an insurance agent. But he doesn't let on that he is an insurance agent, he just says he's an agent. So that's kind of how that one came about, too, is the promises of people in Hollywood that, like, never come through.
How do you, as a creative professional, keep your sense of wonder and your sense of humor, which also comes through in your book, against this background? Because skewer is a wonderful word. It's exactly what you do in here.
Well, I always try to look at my perspective as an outsider looking in, because as an observationist, you know, like Dave Barry and other humorists, they can look and separate themselves and look and see the world from an objective outside point of view. Although sometimes with being in the industry, you know, sometimes it is subjective, but I try not to let it bother me.
I love it's almost two diametrically opposed perspectives that you have at one point. You have your song and the silence, and then you have a very pithy observation just after that. Would you tell me a little bit about And the Silence first?
Well, you know, I'm also a songwriter. As a writer, I pretty much do everything. I was able to write music for 10 years with Albert Haig, who wrote How the Grinch Stole Christmas, and he was one of the stars of Fame, both the movie and the TV show. And I've been playing guitar and music since I was little also. So, you know, I thought, you know what, I have these lyrics that are just kind of sitting around, and I thought some of them were profound enough that I think they would fit with this book. And, you know, so I threw them in. But kind of being the way I am and the way sometimes my thoughts just kind of explode, which is why it's called brain explosion, I thought, let's just put them in there and then shift gears and throw the reader off. One thing that's great is I found that there's this one guy who bought the book, and he put on Amazon a review saying if he was going down in a plane crash, mine would be the last book that he would want to take with him because it would make him smile before he lost it. And I go, what a morbid kind of compliment that was. But it was so cool.
That is actually a great tribute that somebody wants your work to be the last thing they read, even if it does sound a little bit morbid. The next observation, tell me a little bit about this one, please, and also the one that says, if I had a dime for every time I had a bright idea, I still couldn't afford the bulb.
Well, bright ideas are great, but unless someone's willing to buy them, then that's all they are, is a bright idea.
Which leads me to ask, how have you managed to market and make marketable a lot of very wonderful ideas where a lot of other people that had creative ideas tend to kind of dissipate that creative energy and don't do anything with it?
Well, you know, I guess that's the difference from the people who are motivated and people who just kind of sit around and play video games. I'd rather be the creator. And, you know, I'm a never say die kind of person. You know, I've told, like, my fiance Tammy and, you know, friends and things who said, oh my gosh, you've had so many ups and downs in this industry and promises and blah, 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 you know, besides your successes, like, you know, when I worked on Everybody Loves Raymond, things like that. How do you keep your perspective and your bright light on this whole thing? And I say, because that is the only thing I believe God put me here to do, is to just do my work. And I said, I'm here till the end. Nothing is going to stop me. Not even death. I'll come back.
Tell me how you'll come back.
I will come back as an insidious spirit and haunt the studio executive.
We have to pursue this just a little bit. The ghost of Dave Sheldon, hopefully at least 70 years from now, is back to haunt a studio executive. What's the first thing he says?
I'll sign. You better not be the first one. But I just finally wrote my, speaking of, you know, studio execs, I wrote my very first stage play, which is going to be performed at the Group Rep Theater. It was accepted to a shorts festival that Kevin Dobson, the iconic actor from Knot's Landing, House of Cards, Kojak, he's going to be directing it, which I'm very excited. And then hopefully we'll turn that into a television movie.
How exciting. When and where?
Well, it'll premiere this Friday night, and that is at the Group Rep Theater in North Hollywood, California.
And then the following weekend as well, hopefully?
Yeah, it's two consecutive weekends, Friday and Saturday.
Please keep us posted on the television thing on this one.
I will definitely do that.
Tell me a little bit, too. I found that interesting. Every one of your cartoons shows a relationship that doesn't work too well, and your quotes come up with romantic things like, I even like to hear you breathe.
Well, that's kind of like the romantic versus reality kind of dichotomy, because, yes, I've had some really horrendous relationships, and, you know, I've had some good ones. A lot of the work in this book was written and drawn between 1995 and 2006. So until I met my fiance, Tammy, you know, I've had some really weird relationships with some really weird women. And I think that's where a lot of that comes from. But I'm also, like, maybe a hopeless romantic. Although what's strange is I can never write romance comedies, and I don't even like watching them on TV, but maybe I'm kind of a romantic. But so that's where that kind of dichotomy comes from. One thing that I also have had people say about the cartoons and the observations is that, you know, a lot of the stuff is timeless, because I was doing stuff on computers, like some of my cartoons were about computers and about situations that hadn't really happened, and then they're actually coming to light today in society. So I'm always ahead of the curve, I think.
Please tell me that you haven't seen a computer that's going to guilt someone into buying it.
Oh, they're out there already.
Seriously?
Yeah, all those smartphones and, you know, iPads and stuff. they have built-in guilt trips right there when you buy them.
Like what, for example?
Oh, where, like, they have the, when the screen turns on, there's a lot of verbiage that's on there. And, you know, it's, I can't, like, pinpoint exactly what they say, but between subliminal marketing and the stuff that they show in the commercials, you know, there's a lot of guilting on trying to get you to buy it. Like saying, oh, you know, that person has it, so you should have it.
Ah, jump on the bandwagon.
So that's kind of where that comes from. Plus, you know, growing up in a Jewish neighborhood, that was sort of there too.
I won't ruin it by saying what, but there is a wonderful cartoon in here with a computer laying a guilt trip on a prospective buyer. Before we have to wrap up, Dave, what would you really love people to get from you as a creative artist and from Brain Explosion about innovation, creativity, and making a difference?
Well, I do a lot of charity work, so I would like people to know that as successful as anyone gets in this industry, and this industry was made to try to make a difference, not only as entertainment, which I think we need more of, and more good stuff, because the world is becoming such a freaking hard place to live. You know, between what's going on in the Middle East and our government and stuff like that, that I think that with my book, I wanted to create something that people could just pick up, whether they're, you know, it's on their coffee table and they need just something to read or something to just make them feel better, that my book could be a little bit contributory to that. And that's the reason I came up with that.
Dave says his calendar is full of upcoming appearances.
For tomorrow night premieres my play Still a Spark at the Shorts Film Festival at the legendary Group Rep Theater, and Kevin Dobson is directing. That runs Friday and Saturday, and then the following Friday and Saturday. I'm also going to be appearing at Gumby Fest in Glendora later this month, September 20th. So that is in Glendora, California. I'm also going to be screening my kids' show, Professor Creepy, which is on, I have three shows on Kaleidoscope Kids Network on Roku, and it's the fastest growing network on Roku. So people can go check that out if they have that. I will be appearing at HorrorCon, that is downtown LA, on the 25th. And my schedule is like so big. Then I'm also going to be doing Monsterpalooza, which is next Saturday, a week from this Saturday. Oh, and then I'm also going to be speaking at the Chocolate Salon in Pasadena, California, and that is on the 26th.
Let's also give your website.
SnuggieBear.com. Oh, and then there's one more event, which is huge, and people can still get tickets. I'm on the board for Special Needs Music Program, and we are putting on our annual fundraiser and event October 4th at CBS Studios in Studio City, California, from 2 to 5. I'm going to be performing there. Zach will be there. Laura Sangiacomo from Just Shoot Me is our spokesperson and host. And you can go to my Facebook page under Dave Shelton, and you can see links to all my appearances.
And Dave offered a final thought.
Just, you know, everybody just do their best and try to stay happy, and don't let no be your final answer.
Dave, thank you for your time today.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
You and I have been listening to cartoonist, writer, and filmmaker Dave Shelton, author of the book Brain Explosion. You can find out more about Dave's current projects on his website, SnuggieBear.com. That's SnuggieBear.com. You'll also find his schedule of appearances on his Facebook page at facebook.com/Dave.Shelton.5. And if you're in the North Hollywood area this weekend or next, you might like to see Dave's short play, Still a Spark. That's going to be presented at the Lonnie Chapman Theater as one of the selections in their Putting On Your Shorts 4 Play Festival. Showtime is this evening at 8 in North Hollywood. Doors open at 7:30. You'll find more information on Dave's Facebook page, once again, facebook.com/Dave.Shelton.5.
And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomaverix.com. That's twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomaverix@gmail.com. The music you're hearing is royalty-free production music provided by Pond5 at pond5.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.